and welcome. It is Eric Erickson here, the second hour of the program. The phone number, if you want to be on the show, 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. You can reach out to me if you like, Eric, at ewerickson.com. Go to ewerickson.com if you want. Programming note, Todd Stanton's joining me at the bottom of the hour. You're thinking, who? It's a lawyer who fights OSHA. We're going to talk about the vaccine mandate. Whether or not he thinks it's constitutional and how you go about fighting it. Now, I want to commend Texas. The great state of Texas has found a way to get rid of its progressives. You know, a lot of Democrats got really excited in 2020. They thought that Texas was going to swing to the left and elect Joe Biden. In fact, the Biden team poured money into Texas. Texas became for the Democrats what California used to be for the Republicans, a sinkhole for money where you wouldn't actually win, but you were convinced you could. Remember in 2000, George W. Bush and Karl Rove redirected resources to California out of Florida, thinking they had a shot in California. They didn't. Had they poured the money into Florida, we might not have had the debacle we had, but that's all hindsight. In Texas, in 2018, Beto O'Rourke came close to beating Ted Cruz, and Democrats picked up a lot of seats that they weren't expecting. It was a Democratic wave. They assumed in 2020 they would be able to do it again, and in fact, in Texas, there were 10 targets for the Democrats to take in the House of Representatives. They lost exactly zero, or I'm sorry, they won exactly zero. They lost every one of them. 10 targets in Texas, and they lost all of them. They were convinced. They poured resources in. Arguably, the Democrats would have done better nationwide, except they were convinced beyond all reason that they were going to win in Texas, much like they were also convinced they were going to win in South Carolina against Lindsey Graham, and they poured money into that race. And in Kentucky, they poured money in against Mitch McConnell. They really thought they were going to beat Mitch McConnell with, what's her name, Amy McGrath or whoever. At least the Democrat from South Carolina went on to become the chairman of the Democratic National Committee. He won something, even if he didn't win South Carolina. Democrats are convinced they could win Texas, and they didn't, and their hopes were crushed. And now Texas has enacted a pro-life law that the Supreme Court and the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals have been unwilling to put on hold only because the abortion clinics keep suing the wrong people. But in the process, it has largely shut down abortion in Texas. Children are being saved, and now progressives are beginning to flee the state. This is a model. Those of you here in Georgia where I am, the state, everybody's worried the state is trending to the Democrats. You may want to do this law and watch all the progressives flee Georgia. Do it quickly, and so they're gone by the 2022 election. Salesforce made one of the biggest moves. This is from Gizmodo. Made one of the biggest moves in the tech industry in light of highly restrictive Texas abortion law on Friday in a message to employees on Slack. The company said it would help them and their immediate families relocate if they were worried about access to reproductive health care in their state. Although the message, which was obtained by CNBC, appeared not to single out Texas, Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff later went on Twitter to explicitly say the company would help any employees move from the state. Nonetheless, CNBC reported that Salesforce did not take a stance on the law in its Slack message, emphasizing that it respected different views, but also stood in solidarity with women. These are incredibly personal issues that directly impact many of you, especially women. Salesforce said, What? No, you bigots, not just women, people, because people have babies, not women. The company did not take a stance on the law. We recognize and respect that we all have deeply held in different perspectives. As a company, we stand with all of our women at Salesforce and everywhere. Salesforce has offices in Dallas. A CNBC analysis of LinkedIn profiles found about 2,000 people work for the company in Dallas. Tech companies have come under scrutiny in recent weeks for their silence on the Texas abortion law. Notice how the media itself is demanding that companies take positions for left-wing policy. They never did this when the companies they thought might take conservative positions, but now they're perfectly willing to try to push them in a progressive direction. Uber and Lyft announced they would cover all legal fees for drivers sued for taking women to get abortions. Shar Dubey, the CEO of Match Group, which owns Tinder and Hinge, said she would personally create a fund that would help employees in Texas obtain abortions elsewhere. Okay. Now, the Washington Post has a story as well. That's from Gizmodo. This is from the Washington Post. On September 3rd, just 2 days after Texas banned abortions, Vivek Bhaskaran, the chief executive of an Austin-based online survey software company, quickly assembled the handful of female employees that are based in the city. In the virtual town hall that lasted about 15 minutes, he told the women that regardless of insurance, the company would cover out-of-state abortion services. I'm not a politician. I can't change everything, but I'm still responsible for my employees in Texas, and I have a moral responsibility to them, said the CEO of Question Pro. For the last several years, Texas has been selling itself as a tech haven, attracting startups and tech companies such as Oracle, Hewlett-Packard, even Elon Musk. Tesla's billionaire co-founder and CEO moved to the state. Big tech companies like Facebook, Amazon, and Apple have all grown their presence in the state, opening warehouses, data centers, production facilities. But Texas's recent swerve to the right on abortion, voting restrictions, and a ban on COVID vaccine mandates has many workers and industry leaders worried about retaining workers. Y'all, this is a brilliant strategy in the future. See, what's happening here, and you got to follow along with this. What Texas did, what Georgia did, what a number of other states did, Florida was not in this group, by the way. What a lot of these states did is they decided instead of building up businesses that were domestic, businesses that were natural, businesses that were base already in their states, they would lure out-of-state companies into their state. Texas, in particular, focused on tech companies, trying to bring tech companies to Texas. So in Texas, under Greg Abbott's leadership, a lot of incentives were provided for major tech companies to come to the state. And what did these people do? The theory was they would hire Texans to fill the jobs. That's not really what happened. What happened is they brought a lot of people from out of state into the state. In so doing, what happened? They began to change the state. Now, the data actually shows that native Texans are far more liberal than those who came into the state. But in the tech company sphere, the people imported by the tech companies were already liberal. The result is that they have changed the culture of Texas in urban areas where these people live. Texas has now passed a program or a law that does not ban abortion by the state. What it does is it allows individuals a right to sue anyone they find has collaborated in abortion. This is not a new approach to things. Progressives actually pioneered this in environmental regulation in California in the 70s and 80s. I mean, the media talks about it as if it's something new that's never been done before. That's not really true. In the 1970s and 80s, California pioneered for consumer protections and the environment, an individual right to sue, a private right to sue to enforce regulation. And it worked for consumer laws and it worked for environmental laws. During the Obama administration, the federal government pioneered regulations for the first time allowing a private right of citizens to sue over environmental regulations. So, for example, coal ash. Power companies who have used coal-burning plants have to store their ash somewhere. They typically store them in lined lakes and ponds. Sometimes they're not lined, and the residue can seep into the groundwater. And the federal government under Obama's EPA allowed individuals the right to sue over the storage of coal ash. Normally, the EPA itself would sue, but the EPA short staff decided to allow private citizens to do it. Well, the right learned a lesson from this. Why don't we do the same thing with abortion? We will pass laws that allow individuals the private right to sue to stop abortion. It's not something new. It's just never been applied to abortion. It's not something the right came up with. It's actually something the progressives came up with in California in the 70s and 80s. Now, I realize you're not getting that in the media coverage, but it's the truth. You can look it up. But the fallout of this has been hilarious. now you've got massive shifts in tech jobs. Texas has seen a 199% increase in tech job openings. Florida, 206%. North Carolina, 179%. Georgia, 152%. California, 92%. Now, a lot of people are saying that the reason for the job openings is because Texas is conservative and the Republicans won. A lot of it is they actually just need people, but people's political perceptions are being drawn into this. However, that being said, it's not a bad idea for conservative states to consider some legislation that turns off progressives. I mean, there was, if you remember this years ago, there was an effort of conservatives to essentially adopt New Hampshire and have people move to New Hampshire and set up shop in New Hampshire to keep New Hampshire from going left. Progressives have been consciously and subconsciously doing this for some time. Major corporations have been moving people around the country. Amazon is notorious for this. They move into an area, they promise all sorts of jobs creation, and then Amazon brings in all their hipster left-wing employees from Washington State and turns the politics of the state. Tennessee is in danger of this because of Amazon. Amazon set up shop in Nashville. They're changing the character of the surroundings of Nashville, dragging them to the left. Franklin, Tennessee has been pretty Republican. It's trending to the left because of these major tech companies coming in, not hiring existing people there, but bringing in their employees who are progressives. And the tech companies view this as missional. The tech companies view this as a way to shift the politics of states to their advantage. Nobody's paying attention to it. I think you got to pay attention to it. Really need to pay attention to it. But now we see from Texas, there's a way to combat it. Pass conservative laws. Now, I need to speak real quick, and my apologies here. We're growing a national show, I realize, but I am in Georgia. And I want to speak to my Georgia audience, but you, wherever you are, can take lessons from this if you're in a Republican state. Since 2002 in Georgia, the Republican governors have been trying to lure major Fortune 500 companies to Georgia. Porsche, Mercedes-Benz, a bunch of companies they've tried to lure to the state. They tried to lure Amazon to the state and thankfully lost out. What happened with these companies is they came in and they brought their employees with them. They didn't hire Georgians for their major roles. They brought in their executives from other states who were mostly progressive. It coincides with the state becoming bluer and bluer, becoming more competitive for Democrats. When Brian Kemp became governor of Georgia, he decided to stop doing that and instead focus on Georgia businesses that want to get bigger and helping pre-existing companies. It seemed like a no-brainer all along. Why are you trying to bring a company in from New Jersey when you got a competitor here in Georgia that you could make big? And that's what Kemp's done, is he's focused on the state's existing industry and tried to make them competitive and big as opposed to using your tax dollars to draw in bigger companies. The Georgia legislature has been horrible when it comes to real school choice and school reform, issues that are popular with black moms and that draw people to the Republican Party, issues that the Republicans in Florida used to make the state a Republican state as opposed to a swing state. I think they need to start thinking legislatively, what are we going to pass in the state legislature to disincentivize progressives from moving here and incentivize black and Hispanic parents starting to vote Republican? And I think wherever you are, now let's step out of my state, Georgia, to your state. If you got a Republican legislature and a Republican governor, you need to be thinking about the same things. What laws do we pass to signal we're a conservative state so that progressives don't think they can come here? And if they do come here, they're going to be miserable because they can't kill their kids or do God knows what. But also, what are we going to do as a state to incentivize private education and homeschooling, issues that draw parents into the Republican Party? The Republican Party is not a party that is dying. It's only dying in the eyes of the media. But it is dying in ideas. It doesn't have a lot of good ideas these days. I don't know what it means to be a Republican. But if you support homeschools and school choice and the pro-life movement, that segments you from the Democrats and makes you anathema to progressives. And a lot of progressives aren't going to want to deal with your state. And a lot of parents are going to want to be with you because they support sending their kids to private schools to get good education. So
food for thought for you Republicans. Maybe there's a lot we can learn from Texas.
I wouldn't say I'm a chair snob, but I kind of am a chair snob. Y'all, I sit for 3 hours for radio and then all the writing and stuff I do. I'm in my chair in my office a lot, and I bought one of those super expensive Herman Miller chairs, and I've traded it in for my X chair. The moment I sat down and it began to massage my back, I thought, this is the chair for me. Yes, my chair, my X chair, gives me a massage. It also can heat up. It can cool down. It's amazing. The massage, the temperature control, it's designed and made exclusively for the X chair. Once you feel the customized support of its patented dynamic variable lumbar, the DVL, they call it, your back will have never been so happy. What you do, go to xchaireric.com now. That's the letter X, chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee of complete comfort. And I can tell you, as a radio show host who spends a ton of time in my chair, X chair really does have complete comfort. So again, go to xchaireric.com now. Letter X, the word chair, E-R-I-C-K.com for $100 off your order. X chair has a 30-day guarantee, complete comfort. It's xchaireric.com. Take my advice. Get an X chair. Bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Cops is coming back. You know, they got rid of it in a PC era with the BLM and the CRT and the Antifa people. Cops got canceled after George Floyd. 32 years on the air. And it's coming back to Fox Nation. It's the streaming service run by Fox. They picked up the 33rd season of Cops. So Paramount Network, the CBS Viacom cable channel, aired it since 2013. They canceled it. Fox Nation has acquired 33 new episodes of the series from Langley Productions, some of which were being filmed at the time of its cancellation, plus 15 more from the previous season. All four Cops episodes were unveiled October 1st. After four episodes are unveiled October 1st, the new one will be made available each Friday. So Fox News Media is expected to announce the acquisition today. It's going to get blowback, of course. I'm sure there will be all sorts of complaints. Color of Change has pressured Fox since it to drop the show, and I think time to bring Cops back. I don't think it should have been canceled to begin with. You know, what's that other channel? There's the... it's like the live streaming. It's very weird live streaming stuff. I've got friends who are addicted to it, and now I can't remember the name of it. It's like live stream of the body camera footage of the cops and stuff, and you've got some sort of it's almost like the red zone, the NFL red zone. The cops are chasing. Let's go to this city right now. Let's tune in here. It's interesting concept. Who is it? Dan Abrams, I think, came up with it. But then Cops is kind of the standard bearer. 32 years on the air. Yes, Live PD. Thank you, Philip. Live PD. And Cops is kind of the standard bearer here. 32 years on the air. Might as well bring it back. Now, listen to this. This is from the LA Times. Some critics complained that the action captured by the show does not always accurately represent law enforcement work. It often plays up criminal activity involving black suspects. Despite the controversies around the show, Fox News believes its politically conservative viewers, many of whom are in law enforcement or highly supportive of the police, will welcome the opportunity to watch Cops again. As a promotional tie-in with the program, the company is making free one-year subscriptions to Fox News available for first responders. Fox News Media will also donate $5 to Answer the Call, a nonprofit organization that provides financial support to the families of New York City first responders killed in the line of duty for each new subscriber who signs up this week. The move to a subscription streaming service will likely limit the audience to Cops' hardcore fans. It'll also be insulated from advertiser boycotts, as Fox Nation is not an ad-supported service. You know, that's kind of the model moving forward for a lot of people in the industry is subscription models. It's one reason I do Substack here. It helps insulate me from advertiser boycotts, and you guys listening to the show help me cover the syndication costs.
Fox Nation taking on cops probably will give it a boost. I have not subscribed to a lot. We're going to go bankrupt $5 a time with some of these streaming services, but more and more offering some novel programming, including bringing cops back.
Welcome back. It is Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show across the nation from Atlanta, Georgia. Todd Stanton is the founder and president of Stanton Law, a 20-year veteran in employment law, and knows what it's like to deal with OSHA. Joining me by phone, Todd, thanks very much for being with me.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. So let's talk about this. First of all, what's your initial reaction to the legality of the president trying to do a executive order as opposed to going through the normal regulatory process with OSHA?
Well, my personal opinion on it is probably pretty consistent with most of the legal scholars that I've seen. I don't think he can do what it is that he's trying to do that he can't do directly. I don't think he can do through an employer mandate. The rulemaking process is there for a reason. Certainly he is within his bounds to ask OSHA to go through the emergency standard process right now. And whether it gets upheld or not, I don't think he really cares. I think that he is putting the oomph behind the vaccine mandates. It's going to have its intended effect to keep it in the news. And whether or not it comes or goes, I think that I don't think that that's his direct motive. But that's my personal opinion. I think from an employment law standpoint, I think we are looking at something that is a bunch of hubbub about nothing right now. Nothing has come down the pike. If you're a private employer, our recommendation is that you stay the course for what you're doing, maintain true to your culture, and see what comes down the pike next.
Well, and in that regard, with employers, there are apparently going to be some exemptions for people with healthcare issues, people with religious exemptions, employers trying to navigate this with this one. I mean, what's your advice for employers generally on doing a mandate or navigating employees who are hesitant to get it?
So we have not, as a firm, advocated for vaccine mandates, employer mandates, even before the Fed stepped in, simply because of what you said. There are too many exceptions here that they're going to swallow the rule. The medical exceptions and the religious exemptions to the mandate itself, yeah, they're going to be narrow at the end of the day. But for a small business, do they want to go through that hassle? Do they want to argue with their employees about whether those exemptions apply? Are they still going to force somebody who's an A player that they still need to make their money to make their widgets who doesn't want the vaccine? Are they that beholden to a broader social policy that they are going to fire that person if they don't get it? And if they make that exception, what about a B player who doesn't want to get it? Do they make that exception there? So our consistent advice throughout this, and certainly it's going to change if OSHA comes down and imposes penalties for failure to comply, but our standard advice has been to encourage the use of the vaccine, to encourage the following the science has become popular now, but to not mandate it. We're fairly consistent with that.
Now, in that regard, somebody just emailed me a question who's listening to us and wants to know how exactly would OSHA go about monitoring compliance when you've got 170,000 businesses, over 100 employees each? I mean, do they even have the manpower for something like this?
No, OSHA is a distinct agency, and of the agencies with which I deal on a regular basis, OSHA's, they're mostly helpful, right? I mean, and I don't mean to disparage the DOL or the EEOC, but there's always sort of an adversarial tent to them with employers, and OSHA doesn't have that feel all the time, right? I mean, the goal is worker safety, and then mostly people are pulling together on that. But at the same time, with due respect to OSHA, they're overwhelmed on a good day. Mm-hmm. And if you go dump this mandate in their lap, it's going to back them up forever. And I don't think that anybody really knows how it's going to be promulgated. So not only do we not know what the standard's going to look like, not only do we not know how it's going to be enforced, I don't know who's going to enforce it. They don't have that manpower to do it. And even limiting it to companies with 100 or more employees, I just don't see them having the resources in order to do it without making big and good examples out of somebody who they put in their crosshairs.
Well, and I guess therein lies an issue here. Let's say they do try to make an example of someone and try to wake everyone else up. Doesn't that to some degree undermine the relationship OSHA tries to have with employers for worker safety?
Yes, I don't know how to respond to that. I think that it would depend upon the circumstances of that. Most employers, and certainly most of all of my clients, have worker safety at the top of the list. I'm sure that they could find somebody who is not a good safety steward in order to do this. This is all assuming that a workable emergency standard comes down. That provides enough definition to employers, all but those completely unwilling to comply, in order to adhere to it. Otherwise, it's going to be like the tax system. If they go in anywhere, they're going to find a problem with it. Are they going to, for instance, is OSHA going to, if they come in and find somebody who's not been vaccinated, are they going to go through the exemption process? Are they going to vet that? Are they going to check the employer's paperwork for how and whether a religious exemption applies? I think that you start to see how unworkable this becomes, and that's why we're telling our clients to just sit and wait. Let's let the other shoe drop before we go down the path of running around with our hair on fire just yet.
Yeah, the wait and see approach probably seems the most advisable overall with a lot of the stuff. I love Calvin Coolidge's quote that when you see 10 problems bounding down the road, stand still and 9 of 10 will bounce off the road before they get to you. This kind of seems like it could be one of those situations where a more workable solution comes forward. As employers are moving forward with this, getting back to your advocating not really to do vaccine mandates, what sorts of considerations do you think employers need to be thinking about moving forward, particularly this possibly being on the horizon and you still got the virus out there?
Well, we do still have the virus out there, and nothing about this mandate is a business problem yet, right? I mean, a legal problem yet. We still have the business problems that are out there. We still are, most of my clients are having a tremendously difficult time finding workers to do their jobs, to make the widgets, to wait the tables, to sell the widgets, right? So nothing about this is going to address those labor shortages. It also doesn't address the pushback and the unfortunate political nature of this that has drawn a line through so many of these workforces where people are stubborn in one camp or the other. So what we are seeing employers have to deal with is to address the business problems that are endemic, not just the pandemic problems or the legal problems that might be coming down the pike.
That makes a lot of sense. Todd, before I let you go, what other thoughts and considerations do you think people need to be mindful of, just in general, beyond employers, as we consider this more and more?
So I had I run a small law firm. We have 18 employees here, 14 lawyers and four other clerks and staff. And dealing with kids being out of school, dealing with supply chain shortage, there is so much grace that is necessary in order for us to run an 18 employee business. Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine what larger businesses are going through what parents are going through trying to deal with their kids in school, trying to deal with the lost time from last year, trying to deal with all the other stuff that they have to do. And I would encourage employers specifically to focus on your good employees, focus on your company culture, extend the grace to get through this, and let's focus on the business rather than the points of dissension and poking each other in the eye.
That is great advice. You know, it actually is interesting, the amount of people who have just kind of lost focus right now. And I hear this talking to friends of mine who are in businesses, their employees get so worked up over this, and they are having to balance the schedules, and the kids are suddenly home. And in my county, the schools are back on lockdown, so nobody can go to school, and having to reshuffle priorities. It just makes the entire economic situation and business situation so much more complex in addition to everything else.
Well, if I can say, in my experience, about 5% of employees cause about 95% of your problems. And 95% of the employees are going want to go to work, do their jobs, and collect their check and go home. And too many times, employers get hung up on hitting those 5 percenters and focusing too much time and resource on the people who are, frankly, being pains in the rear end, rather than focusing on the people who are doing what they're supposed to do. And if employers can focus on what's going right and leaning into helping the ones who are making the widgets, who are waiting the tables, selling the widgets, then I think that that's a better course rather than spending a bunch of time, emotional energy, and resources on the people who are going to be a pain in the ass no matter where they go.
Yes, that's great advice, which also reminds me I should fire my whole team because they're all pains to me all the time. Todd, listen, thank you so much. I appreciate you being able to take some time to talk about this. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you, Eric.
Absolutely. Todd Stanton, my pains in the rear end staff, though, are necessary, so I have to keep them occasionally. But, you know, good advice. Focus on the good. And, you know, there's something else that he said that really stands out. So I was watching... you know, Matt Chandler, the pastor out in Texas, Todd mentions, showing some grace within your workforce with all the disruption. Employees need to be showing the employer some grace, the employee some grace. I was really struck by that because I'd seen this clip of Matt Chandler, the preacher. I want to play you this clip. He was, preaching at an installation service for another pastor. Listen to this. Well, let me rearrange the audio. I thought I had clicked the button. I apparently did not. Here we go.
You have been afforded grace despite you, and therefore we're going to share grace with one another. Now, here's what's crazy. That sounds so simple. And yet, in 2021, it's actually an apologetic. Like the bar right now of being salt and light, it's fairly low. Right? I mean, there was a day where like, you better get those presuppositional apologetics in. Everybody's reading Keller and then mimicking, right? Reading John Frame and... Like now it's like, hey, don't be angry all the time. You know what it's like, don't be a jerk. And it's like, okay, here we are. People are like, something's different about this guy. Right? It's just like, hey, don't be a jerk. Actually, give people, specifically brothers and sisters in Christ, the benefit of the doubt. Like you see, it's not crazy. Like you teach second graders that. But the church, by the way, we've lost our mind. Like we're devouring one another. No benefit of the doubt. Wanting to kind of isolate in a tribe. Vilifying other churches. And I'm saying, let's not do that. Let's not let storyline be that place where we give in to the outrage of our day, but rather just determined by the grace of God to love one another, serve one another, bless one another, give one another the benefit of the doubt, champion in one another, mourn with one another. The 59 one another's in the New Testament call us to be the kind of people that won't give in to that nonsense, but shine like a light in that darkness.
I thought that was well said. And it just the point being, you don't have to be a jerk. Show each other some grace. And that goes with the employer-employee situation right now, too. A lot of people angry with their employers over minutes. A lot of employers frustrated with the employees who everything is disrupted now. And a lot of people, I actually was talking to a friend of mine the other, and he is, I got to say this, he is a very good friend. I've known him for a long time, and he's so annoyed with his employees who are parents. And because some of them, they're now have to reshuffle it around because schools are closed. They got to be home with their kids. They can't leave their kids. And he's so annoyed. I'm like, dude, we're in a time right now that none of us living have ever experienced. None of us have experienced this. We all get frustrated with it. Just calm down. Calm down. Your employees are the same good people they were a year ago. We're just in uncharted territory, and all of us are trying to chart it. There's no good guidance. Nobody trusts anybody. So we've all got to navigate it. We're arriving at different conclusions. We're all trying to go at it together. Just show each other some grace. Be nice. You don't have to be a biblical donkey. You don't have to be a jerk. It is amazing to me how far you can go in life just by not being a jerk. And it's also amazing to me how few people seem to have learned that lesson of late in these uncharted times. Nobody really knows what they're doing. They're all just trying to get through life in a muddled mess right now. Employers as well. And the Biden administration, not to make a political point here, but the Biden administration has just muddied the water further for everyone with his OSHA mandate. So thank you, Todd, for being able to stop by and give some clarity to it. Bottom line right now, employers, just focus on your business. Don't worry about this. The rules aren't written.
Why, hello there. I would love to have you on the program if you want to. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. Y'all know Buc-ee's. Now, I got to explain this to you, because if you don't live in Texas, you may not know what Buc-ee's is. We have had now a couple of them open in Georgia. I'm actually pulling up their website to figure out where are the Buc-ee's of America. You got two in Alabama, two in Florida, two in Georgia. You got a bunch in Texas. They're in Texas, Georgia, Florida, and Alabama. And even then, you've got one in Leeds, Alabama, one in Locksley, Alabama, one in Daytona Beach, Florida, one in St. Augustine, Florida, one in Calhoun, Georgia, one in Warner Robins, Georgia. The rest of them are Texas. So most of you listening right now have never experienced a Buc-ee's. It is an experience. It is one of the few places on planet Earth outside of IKEA where I can get a panic attack, because they are massive. I think the one near me has 40 or 50 pumps for getting gas. But at Buc-ee's, you can get brisket, and it's good brisket. It is like your own little barbecue restaurant inside the gas station, and it's incredible. And at Buc-ee's, you can get beaver nuggets, which you eat one, you're going to eat the whole bag. Buc-ee's is amazing. It is a cult in Texas. When I go to Texas, when I go to Austin in particular, I drive to Buc-ee's. There's a Buc-ee's in Bastrop, Texas, and I drive there when I leave the airport because I love Buc-ee's. Buc-ee's is wonderful. Well, the problem is that the owner of Buc-ee's gas stations, Arch Appling, has given money to Greg Abbott and Texas Republicans. This is from the Houston Chronicle. Arch Beaver Appling III, owner of the Texas-based gas station chain Buc-ee's, has backed the Texas GOP for some time. Progressive activists are coming for Buc-ee's. They are opposed to the owner of Buc-ee's giving to Texas Republicans. That's right. There is an organized backlash coming. A woman on Facebook warned progressives that the owner of Buc-ee's is giving to Republicans. According to Transparency USA, Appling has given to 20 Republican PACs, including to PAC supporting Dan Patrick, the Lieutenant Governor, Governor Greg Abbott, Attorney General Ken Paxton, Speaker of the House Dade Phelan, former Speaker Dennis Bonin. Unsurprisingly, Appling has given the most to Greg Abbott, $1.25 million or so. And he's donated since July 14th, $490,000 towards Greg Abbott's Super PAC. And now progressives are upset. Y'all can't hate Buc-ee's. Buc-ee's is the greatest gas station on planet Earth, even though I can have a panic attack inside. There are so many people who go into Buc-ee's, but it is an incredible gas station. And the left wants to destroy it because they're heretics. You see, this is what happens when you replace religion with politics. You have to destroy the heretics. And at Buc-ee's, the owner happens to be a Republican. Who cares? It's a phenomenal shopping experience if you want great brisket and plenty of gas station pumps. It's just insane that this is happening, and yet we're going to see more and more of this unless companies go to the left. Progressives are going to boycott them.